Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Shell and Tell, your boy here at Terps B Expert. It was a very interesting week. I think we all had a case of the surrender Cobras there in the first quarter, just kind of losing our mind. Even before that, in the parking lots, pulled in for our tailgate around 2 p.m. Everything had looked fine all day. The weather report looked pretty decent, at least that morning when I had checked. And then as the skies got darker and darker, we looked up and scattered thunderstorms. Well, we entered the parking lot and boom, all the lightning, all the rain pouring. We're sitting there with our two parking spots. We had a girl's car and a guy's car. We're sitting there eating meatball subs, waiting for the rain to pass. Eventually, still got the tailgate stuff out, had a good time for a few hours. It was one of those things that kind of aligned everything at once. We have some friends that we started taking a couple years ago to a game here and there. They're old season ticket holders that hadn't done it in a while. And from coming and hanging out with us and realizing, you know, it's a good time, they and the Maryland lowering their ticket prices immensely this year. They have their own tickets, which has been fun. They've expanded our tailgating circle that way. They're there most of those games. And then we were also brought another family to their first game. And it was kind of cool to see their son, kind of a rough and tumble 10-year-old kid, you know, little flashbacks to me being 11 years old, starting to go to all these games, acting a fool, you know, playing with a football, pretending I'm one of the guys, you know, just, it was a really interesting experience. The rain and lightning, changed a lot of things, I think, for this game. Unfortunately, the gameplay was fine. It was pretty much dry for 99% of the actual game time, but it was a hot mess all through the tailgating hours, all through the commuting hours of this game. Lightning, thunder, rain, to the point where we packed up our tailgate probably about 30, 45 minutes earlier than we usually would, headed up to the stadium where the stadium would normally be wide open, and just we were trying to avoid that like last lightning thunderstorm to have to run up there and, you know, pouring rain, just wanted to get into the stadium. And we're told, there is lightning in the area. Please return to your cars. There is lightning in the area. Please return to your cars. On the overhead speaker. It doesn't make any sense to me. I've never really seen this at any stadium. I know they take you out of the bowl. I know it's a risk to be out there on the aluminum bleachers. I know it's a risk to be out there in the open. But the concourse of CQ Stadium is plenty big enough. The parking situation at University of Maryland is not convenient at all for anyone. So you have like a couple people in the Gossett garage there that have very convenient, they can walk back to their cars. A few people in lot one with a not that bad walk, but for the most people, the people in lot one, lot 9B, lot 4B, the garage, that is a haul uphill to the stadium. Nobody's going back to their cars. How that wasn't sent out to all, you know, ticket holders in a blast email or text alert or from our ticketing agents or a tweet or anything, I don't know. In fact, a tweet's not even enough. It needed to be direct messaging. So, of course, we did not return back to our cars after a, you know, 2-mile hike from 4B through the rain. We stood there outside of the gates underneath the concourse. I do think that Maryland probably lost some attendance from that. Not much. I'm not going to give the fans credit that they made it that far. I think most of them stayed home just off the weather report alone. We eventually got in the stadium. It was wet for a while, but lightning was not happening. It was cleared up. Everything got going. The setup by NBC was really cool. They had the Sky Cam. They had cameras on the visiting sideline. So again, this is something we've been asking for a while, that every game, if you film it from Tyson Tower, is going to look like it is mostly away fans, because the cameras are filming the visiting sideline. That's just the way it is. So it was really cool to see the cameras over there. I hope that continues with some of our other national broadcasts. We won't have to wait long to find out. Got another one here Friday night. But no one came. Nobody braved the elements. Again, it made it look even worse, because during the game, there were really no elements to brave. So once people tuned in to national TV, it looked like a normal dry game that no one came to. It's a terrible look for the university. We've been complaining about this fan support, where it has to be exactly a 3:37 game on a sunny day, but not too sunny, not too hot. I mean, this is the same fan base that we had an episode where they told me that they couldn't go to a basketball game because it was raining, an indoor sport, because it was raining. So we are a spoiled fan base. We are, I guess, elitist, perfectionist fan base. I don't understand what it will take to get out of this. I get it. It's Charlotte. It's not that big of an opponent. But all the storylines and the national TV aspects and things like that should have been able to bring more people out than it's shown. The student section was okay, but it's not anywhere near as good as people are giving it credit for. People are saying, well, the students showed up. No, the students didn't show up. They filled the two sections for the flag drop. Congratulations. And they were like 75% in two other sections. Thank God it was the weekend where the high school bands play with everyone. The high school bands were tough enough to show up. The high school twirlers and flag girls were tough enough to show up. And they came and performed, and they sat in what usually would be an empty student section to the right of the band. And then all behind the band and all above the high schoolers, all that was empty. The majority of the section to the right of the flag drop and the left of the flag drop, and a whole nother section, one more to the left. So the areas where the students were standing looked full, but that's not the student section. The student section is far bigger than the bodies they filled. You know, you're in two camps with this. I'm not going to convince anybody of anything here. This is, you're fine with what it is, and you are going to give excuse after excuse for both the fans and the students in these scenarios, or you already agree with me and you already are sick of being the only person that shows up to games and the only one dedicated enough. And no matter how much better we make the game day experience, people still sit at home because their fancy 65-inch 4K, 8K, 3D TVs and their refrigerator is more convenient than the experience of being there with 30,000 to 50,000 people, depending if we have a real game or not. It doesn't make sense to me. It'll never make sense to me, but I've been doing this for 22 years. You know, it's what I do. I go to all the home games. I go to some of the away games. Being there in person and feeling the atmosphere and seeing the in-between things and seeing the visiting sideline being different every week and getting the up-close look at who our opponents are and getting the idea of when they walk in the stadium of, oh man, that's the biggest line we've seen this year, or oh, those linebackers look a little light, look like they're maybe like the ACC fast linebackers, not the Big Ten strong linebackers. All of that is things you don't really get on TV. You can try, but it's not there. They've added the light shows. They've added the entrance spectacular. The sound system's great. The screen's great. The fans need to show up. Loxley talked about it being that the team doesn't look at these external motivators. That's more of a thing for recruiting and national exposure. It's a huge thing in recruiting. We've heard over and over again, it's the one drum that everybody keeps banging against Maryland to try to keep us down is game day experience is subpar. Well, Maryland's doing their job for the game day experience to be not subpar. They're doing a great job. Do we have some more things to do? Go? Sure. Do we need the bathrooms remodeled like 30 years ago? Yeah, they do. But they've done everything they can. Every year they're improving. We need people to show up and go to the stadium. But the fans and students were not the only ones that didn't show up, because within 3 minutes of the start of the game, as you all know, We are down 14-0 on a completely blown coverage, like didn't even come off the line with him or jumped a route that there was no pump fake on. I couldn't, even from rewatching, it blew my mind how Shepard left him all by himself. I don't know if they thought he couldn't throw the ball over 20 yards and the game would just let him go, or if it was just a completely selfish decision that he was trying to show off against a lower level quarterback and take a ball back to the house. But it was a boneheaded move that I could have scored a touchdown on as a wide receiver. So you got that knocked off, and then a terrible read by Talia Tungvaloa and throwing to a defensive end to walk 6 feet into the end zone. And all of us are sitting there with our surrender cobras on, hands on our head, head between our knees. Wife's asking, what's going on? Are they supposed to be this good? And I'm like, no, the season's over. Like, we're done. Like, this is not a thing. Of course, you know, it's all emotional, reactionary. The season's not done. The season wouldn't even have been done if we lost. It would have been really, really sad if we lost. But until you lose a second Big Ten game, you're still in it for the Big Ten championship. So what would it have mattered? I didn't just stop getting nervous there, though. I stayed nervous. I stayed nervous through the punts. I stayed nervous through the field goals. I was stressed out all the way until we took a 10-point lead. And then even at the 10-point lead, me and Loxley saw that as a different game. Because I look up and we got backups in there pretty much across the board. I think I saw Still and Trader Jr. were the only starters on the field. We're up 10-0. And I'm looking at Fred, how are they looking this as safe? And what happens but a QB rush for 65 yards or whatever it was down the field. And then you see Loxley, instead of just like sending his nine guys out there, next play he put out three or four of the starters back in, next play three or four of the starters back in. Then we had the pick. And from there on, it was just a roll session, just points and points and points. Loxley seemed to act like we didn't finish strong. In fact, I'll let him talk to you here.
Yeah, I think anytime, you know, when you play from behind, it develops a character. It also reveals character. And I hope what it revealed for us is that, you know, we're one of those teams that when we talk about not looking up and not flinching and not worrying about the score until the end of the game, you know, all those things I did see, those were the bright spots of what this team was able to do today. But to me, I'd rather, like I said, execute better, start faster, making sure that when we come out with the right type of energy and enthusiasm. And then for me, the fourth quarter finish is the key to it. And I really didn't like how we finished in the fourth quarter. Had opportunities to get off the field. We missed some tackles. We blew a coverage at the end. Those are the things that we got to get corrected pretty quickly here with Virginia coming in town on Friday.
Again, I just didn't see it that way. Yes, in the royal we did not finish strong, but the we was your third and fourth string players. The we was not your starters. The difference in the Big Ten, the reason that it sounds a little silly that we could be able to be competing for Big Ten championships is still the depth. When Ohio State loses a five-star, they have a four or five-star sitting behind them. It's just the way it is. Same thing at Michigan. Pretty much the same thing at Penn State. The depth is where we are different. Top-end talent, we're getting there. I think we kind of have it in the skill positions. Offensive, defensive lines, depends on the year. Depends on which position you're talking about. I still think we are a tier down in that world. But when you're talking about your third string versus the third string of any of those teams, that's like the glaring issue that will haunt us. If we show up healthy to those teams, you got a shot. This is football. Nobody stays healthy. There's no team that shows up after week three, four in the NCAA season that shows up healthy. It's just not the reality. Hell, we got players that still haven't suited up for us this year. They get help that get hurt in the summer, in the spring, and there's players that have came here and just never played a down. And everywhere else it's true of. So anyway, I don't think that it was our starters that didn't finish strong. Sure. Should he expect more out of his backups? And is it okay to talk the way that he did to the backups and like let them know that if you want playing time, you got to do better than that? All right. But as far as talking to the fans, just know that if it's a 7-point game, those people aren't playing. They're not there. If the name across the field is not Charlotte, he doesn't put them in when we're up 10. So you got to take that slow ending with a grain of salt. Now, the slow start, that's on us. All our starters made those bad decisions, and it could have been so much worse. So much worse. We went back and looked at the game when I got home, and Talia's first throwaway was 100% intentional grounding. He had dropped back to the left, started to roll right to throw it away. He was still within the tackle box. 100% intentional grounding. Could have been called there. After the initial touchdown by them passing, that kickoff was fumbled by Octavian Smith. Ended up not mattering because they scored 6 points on the next play anyway. But another problem. And then the next kickoff was bobbled by Octavian Smith and returned. The fumble by Billy Edwards on the 4th-and-1 that was picked up by Hemby to get a fourth down conversion. Heads up play by Hemby. Hell of an athletic play by Hemby. But ball should never have been there. Also, let's talk about it. Billy should have been on the field. Why is Billy running all our 4th-and-1 plays? Well, the other running back, Antoine Littleton, got in the doghouse, got a personal foul while we were inside the red zone and ended up only getting 3 off that drive, and he didn't see the field again, or at least only on special teams. I believe I saw the number 7 on special teams, but he didn't have another carry. He wasn't playing at running back the rest of the game. Loxley speaks about that.
All I know is that we have a standard, and I'm tired of dumb penalties. I'm tired of us doing stuff after the whistle. You know, a week ago I dealt with, we had an offsetting penalty on special teams that he was involved with. We're down at the 4-yard line, and we get a personal foul because of the being emotional. And I said the only way you fix stuff like that is by what happened today. You put him on the bench, Kobe gets the opportunity, he takes advantage of the opportunity. To me, that's how we're going to play this thing. And if guys don't play to our standard, if we're going to have the dumb penalties, you're going to be on the bench.
I don't have a problem with it. I think that it's a luxury. I think it's a luxury that we have because it is Charlotte. I think it's a luxury that we have because this running back room is our most loaded, room. I think that you can make those decisions when it comes to places that have depth, like we just talked. We don't have depth everywhere. We have depth at wide receiver. We have depth at running back. So if you have the opportunity to make a point in that running back or wide receiver room and hope that that means you never have to make a point in your linebacker room, in your cornerback room, in your tight end room, great. Because I don't think Corey Dyches gets a personal foul that takes us out of field goal range or costs us a chance at a touchdown. We only get a field goal that we don't see Corey Dyches again. I don't think that's true of Still. I don't think it's true of Shepard. I don't think it's true of Trader. But maybe it is. This is what everybody's been calling for, right? This is what the problem with this team. One of the, again, the drums that they've been beating about Locks as he got here. Undisciplined team. Controllable atmosphere. Well, the control is a luxury. To be able to sit your best players, you need someone to replace them. This was a place where he had that. This is a place where he could probably not cause his team. Do I hope that Antoine Littleton is back on the field and used for some of these 3rd-and-short, 4th-and-short plays? Yes. Do I think that we are going to get through the Big Ten season with just lining up and using Billy Edwards as a QB sneak on every fourth and inches or fourth and one play? No, I don't. They didn't even look that good against Charlotte. They all barely crept across. There was one fumbled snap. There was another bobbled snap. The only thing that I could see going for this is if you were just leaning into it and showing that look over and over again as a QB sneak to set up for a play against a Michigan and Ohio State where you have a fourth and gotta have it to do a jump pass or like a quick out slant or something where everyone's sold out because they are sure that's your play. If this is all a long game, a chess act, awesome. But if this is the plan for anything under 1 yard the rest of the year, no thank you. Don't sign me up for that. I'll go back to the Randy Edsel bubble screens. We have better players. If you want to put Edwards out there to run, I'm okay with that. Put him in a pistol or a shotgun and give him the option to find where to run and have an option to pass. Don't sell out on just hoping that your center and guard are better than the man across from them and that Billy Edwards can get across that. That's not our strength. I hope that we are either using it to set up or that it just dies on the vine. I don't think it's a good play. But I've been proven wrong time and time again. Maybe they end up winning the national championship with a Billy Edwards QB sneak from the 1 yard line. I don't know. Anything can happen. So what did we see? What did we take away from this game? I think Loxley was right. I think you saw a team that used to quit, used to roll over, used to just disappear when things went wrong. I didn't really see infighting on the sidelines. I didn't really see much frustration or angst on the sidelines. I didn't see a single wide receiver chirping about it. I saw a little bit of fear on Talia's face. I'm not going to lie to you. I definitely think that he was just bewildered about how bad of a decision he made on that first pass. And then after the first or second punt, you could just see the like building in his head. But they got it together. Sean Jones got that first down right at the end of the first quarter. They really never looked back. Production and production and production. Whether it was field goals, it should have been touchdowns. You know, that's great. One of those field goals certainly was a touchdown with one of the worst offensive pass interference calls I've ever seen in my whole life. So you got to give them credit for that. Overall, you got scored 38 unanswered points after a fluky first 3 minutes. You played well. You didn't cover because of a weird backdoor touchdown that was on our backups. We saw some good things out of our backups at times. We saw some fumble recovery by Greeley. What I was surprised to find was the Octavian Smith bobbles. That didn't make any sense to me. But when I left the Towson game, I was so high on him. I was like, he is going to be an absolute monster. He is sure-handed. He is going to be just a drag route, you know, savant, a all-time kick returner. I was looking at, like, Will Likely, like, numbers in my head. Put him on punt return. Put him on kick return. Let him have every go. And then we're bobbling the ball like Ty Felton before the Michigan game. That's got to get under control. We cannot have turnovers in the kicking game. We can't. We're not good enough to beat the good teams if we're going to do silly things like that. We're not. We got to stay healthy, and we got to not beat ourselves. That's how you get into that level. Now, as objective as my homer self can be, we are right there in that tier two. I know it was a slow start, but you just look at those first three halves of the year as preseason games and move it on from there. When you look around the league, that's what makes you more confident. It's not about us. We probably are, if you focus on that second half, right about where I thought we were. We still got some offensive line issues, but I saw a lot of good things. I saw a lot of effort. Saw a lot of downfield blocking. I saw offensive linemen pushing the running back when it's a pile, moving the pile. I mean, to the point where one of them, I think, was like 9 yards and took like 35 extra seconds. You know, it is illegal to assist the runner on a run like that. It's never called because it's so hard to say what they're doing, whether they're blocking, whether they're pushing a defender into the running back. It's never called, and it probably never will be. But I did look at Fred on that one and was like, you know, maybe that's one of the ones that should be called, the assisting in the runner there. But I think that's just never going to be a thing. Delmar Glaze looks great. Fagan, whether he stays there and we shore up the guard position or whether he's back into the depth spot is yet to be seen. I heard some people singing his praises more than others. Most people are just bewildered how we could be this far into a rebuild and still be having a walk-on anywhere near the starting lineup with injuries or no injuries, especially this early in a year. But they seem to be restocking on that. I mean, look at the recruiting class. We got 8 offensive linemen that they're bringing in next year. Prather showed me some things. As high on Octavian Smith as was after the Towson game, I really was not high on Prather. In fact, leaving the Charlotte game, I wasn't super high on Prather because his negative plays in that game stuck with me in the moment more than his positive plays did. And also, I couldn't tell how bad a call that offensive pass interference was from my angle. I saw him reach out, touch the player with both hands. I did not see any extension once his hands touched him from my angle. But I did see kind of unnecessary contact, just locating the defender where he could have just paid attention to his own thing. I get it. It's not illegal. But as he learned, it does come with a risk. The official that made that call was on the complete wrong side of him to make that call. All he could see was Prather's number. He can't tell whether his elbows, hands, fingers are extended from where he was standing. It's kind of embarrassing that call was made, and the replay makes it even worse. That should have been made by the other official on the other side. That's who can make that call. If you don't have the angle, there's other people there. That's why there's not one official. Don't make the call if you don't have the angle. Let that pass. So anyway, the offensive pass interference was worse in my mind. Our very first drive after the pick six would have been extended by a kind of T-Rex short arm attempt by Prather on a 10 and out that I thought was very catchable. Didn't even touch his hands because, again, I think he short-armed that play. So it's kind of stuck with that, not to mention the interception in the other end zone. Unfairly to him in that moment, I believe that your job there is to make sure that's not an interception. You are much bigger than the cornerback or the safety coming over on that play. You turn from an offensive player to a defensive player, and you break up that pass. I guess maybe he couldn't see him. I can't imagine. That's a play where you just demolish him. You take 15-yard penalty, and you live to, you know, fight another day. You can't let him just have that free ball there. So those things stuck with me. I was very negative on the possibility of Prather being our next great wide receiver. But when I came back and I watched the game and saw the different angles, I'm pleasantly surprised how wrong I was. I think that he's growing with Talia. I think that the push-off was nothing. It should never have been called. The first down ball should have probably been caught or at least attempted on better, but it could have got on him too fast. Talia was kind of forcing the ball. He had just made a big mistake. He was not trying to throw it, you know, too close to coverage. So it was probably in a place where only the receiver could catch it, but it was still difficult receiver to catch it. So I think he's going to be big. I think he's going to do really well. I think it's the easiest bet on DraftKings this week. It was Prather receiving touchdown was plus 220. Also, a Hemby receiving touchdown is like plus 500. He gets enough screen passes and bubble screens that's a no-brainer. Go throw some money on those. Put a little bit of scratch down this game. I'm excited. I think that they're going to put it all together. I think that halftime was that jump that Loxley said, biggest jumps from game one to game two. Well, he actually meant from the first half of game two to the second half of game two. That's what he really meant. He just misspoke the first time. We're going to continue that growth. We're going to go back into the ACC where we absolutely dominate people. Ever since the very first matchup, the very first bowl game back against Boston College, we lost. We've been rolling the ACC since. Absolute butt kicking of Syracuse at home when they were ranked. An absolute butt kicking of Virginia Tech in the Pinstripe Bowl. A dominant win over NC State last year. Not quite the butt kicking of the other ones, but still, we didn't worry about it. We got the job done. The Big Ten's better than the ACC, period. We are now competitive in the Big Ten. Whether we are at the top of the Big Ten, no. We're still fighting at that tier two, but that don't mean we can't shock some people. And again, looking forward, if we are what we thought we were, the rest of the league seems to be coming back to us a little bit. I'm no more sure today of any win against Ohio State, Penn State, or Michigan. In fact, I'm more sure that Penn State's probably not happening. What I am more certain of are those other teams. The Northwestern games. The Indiana games. The Michigan State games. I see no reason why we don't win those. So if you just say you're winning those, we're going 5-0 into the shoe against Ohio State, who to me looks like the most beatable of the top three. And honestly, I don't hate it being on the road. Look back at the Penn State games. The ones we won were in Happy Valley. There's something about these hyped-up games at College Park. Something about the fact that all week we talk about how big the game is. But we don't have the ability to keep the Ohio States and the Penn States out of our stadium. So these 18 to 22-year-old guys get all hyped up, ready to go, biggest game in a generation, and walk out that tunnel and hear, O-H-I-O, we are. And that's got to take something out of it. It has to. And, I mean, I sold two of my 12 tickets to Ohio State fans last year. It's hard not to. They're willing to pay $400 a ticket for something I pay $55 for. It's hard to come to that game. If I sold all 12 tickets, I could have paid for the next three seasons of Maryland football. I'm still going to be there. My family's still going to be there, but those, you know, I try to find Maryland fans to sell them to. They don't exist. They're not going to spend $300 or $400 a ticket. For the most part, I'm just eating it this year. I'm not interested in selling the tickets. I'm just finding people to go or spreading out. Those are kind of the plans. But I don't blame you if you're the one selling the tickets to the away teams. I don't blame you. It's hard, especially for those two games, three games, to see what you can get versus coming down to the field. But anyway, at Ohio State, they know that they're going into a hostile territory. They know they're going to hear O-H-I-O. They will feed off that someone's there that hates them, and it'll be a motivating factor. It's not a motivating factor to hear that in your own stadium. It's not a motivating factor to see that in your own stadium when you're talking about a Penn State or a Michigan. Harder to tell with the Ohio State fans, unless they were just their spelling bee is the only reason you know they're there. But I think we got a shot. I think it's going to be a good season still. We still got to stay healthy. Offensive line number two. I almost said number one. Talia number one, offensive line number two, defensive line number three, though we are finding some guys. I feel like we found a bunch of number twos. We have a very solid second line, but unfortunately some of them have to be our starters. Hopefully we continue to develop and get some breakouts, and I see more out of those guys. Right now, they're not getting pushed around, but they're not getting interior pressure on the pass rusher or on the passer. They're mostly gap sound, but certainly have found a couple times where we let the longest QB run last week was right up the middle. It wasn't around the outside edge. So there's still things to develop, but I'm not worried about it. That's enough of looking back. Now let's look way back. Way back in the ACC. What's a Virginia game mean to you? Do you remember this rivalry? I never really liked them. Not really like... Yeah, I didn't like the fans, and I didn't really like the players, but it wasn't like I looked forward to playing them because it was just so different. The Clemsons, the Virginias, the Georgia Techs even, just this like uppity frat boy lifestyle, just wearing ties to football games. Like Dockers. It just doesn't make sense. I don't like it. I don't miss it at all. Pretty much nobody in the Big Ten is like that. The only one I could maybe think about is like a Northwestern, but honestly, even they're not really frat boy. They're just kind of more elitist type, you know. They're not going to get into an argument. They're not going to be there being intimidating. They're not going to be a drunk fest. But I don't think they wear ties and Dockers like we dealt with in the ACC. I don't miss it. I'm glad we left the ACC. I'm perfectly fine to develop new rivalries. Now, do I enjoy having these so that we can continue to show beyond a doubt that the Big Ten is better than the ACC? So we can talk in the recruiting battles about what we have done against Virginia Tech, against Virginia, against West Virginia. Our last games we played against them. This is the last of that border battles. I guess you can, we need to get Pitt in the stadium and play them. Just continue our border that we are defending here. We got North Carolina, which is very close. It's not a border state, but it's awfully close. You got Virginia that we're coming up next. We already beat Virginia Tech the last time we saw them. We beat WVU the last time we saw them. So on the gridiron, we're closing those walls. On the recruiting trail, we have and we haven't. We still got people reaching up here and stealing things. But every time you play one of these games, it matters for that. It's another feather in your cap, another thing you can point to. So this game is going to matter. Is Virginia in a good spot? No. But are they completely incapable of scaring us and beating us? Absolutely not. This is a step up in competition. 100%. This is a step up in competition. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it's a big step up in competition, but it's a step up in competition. And even if it's not, even if I'm wrong, it's a step up in credit. Nobody's going to look at a box score and see that we beat Charlotte or Towson by any number and be like, oh, yeah, they deserve some top 25 votes. We got one. Got one last week. But when you talk about Virginia Cavaliers, it's still an ACC team. It's still a Power 5 team. The ACC, as much as I'm down on it, still counts towards the FBS rankings better than a Charlotte or a Towson would. Do they have their problems? Sure. I thought one of them was fixed, but apparently not. Look back to them playing Tennessee, who, granted, it's a very, very good team this year. They're ranked number 11 in the country. Tony Musket, their quarterback, went 9 for 17 with an 8.7 QBR. 94 yards, a 5.5 yard average. No TDs. No INTs. Well, after that, he got hurt, had a shoulder issue, and they took over with a freshman. Freshman bit better in that game, not good. 2 for 7 for 12 yards, a 66.4 QBR, but frankly, a QBR is not going to work with that many attempts. But then the James Madison game, he really put up some numbers, 20 for 26, 377 yards, 14.5 average, 2 TDs, 1 INT, QBR of 70. Not lighting the world on fire, but as a true freshman, if he's arguably better than what you have now and is your future, why you wouldn't be sticking with him, I have no idea. But Virginia's coach must really believe you do not lose your spot to injury because they just announced that Musket will be their starter. Loxley has said all week they are preparing for both quarterbacks because they are not sure who they are going to see. Well, I'd like to see both quarterbacks in this one, too, because if they have to make another QB change, it means things are going well. It means things are going the way that I think they're going to go and that we are going to make those quarterbacks look silly. Our defensive backs will finally be tested on a regular enough basis that the big plays will happen. We have two almost turnovers on the exact same sideline the last two games with a safety catching a bobbled ball but their feet being out of bounds before the catch is completed. Hopefully those stay in bounds this game. Hopefully we can get those big-time turnovers. Hopefully we can make people scared of throwing on the secondary that we were all so excited to see. I haven't seen them have any real big screw-ups outside of the one play against Charlotte, that was a cornerback, not a safety issue, pretty clearly. We haven't really seen the big plays come in. I have seen some hard hits by Bo Braid, for sure. We have talked about before that I'm done seeing our safeties, our leading tacklers, but, you know, that might just continue to be a thing as much as they're rushing Bo Braid at the passer. Let's get the big turnovers. Let's show the no-fly zone. Let's let Still and Shepard go to work and slow these guys down. I think we'll see them both. If they're going to start with Musket, and he put up those kind of numbers against Tennessee, I don't think he's going to put up amazing numbers versus us. And if you just saw QB2 putting up big numbers, it's going to not take all that many mistakes to put him back on the bench. Once you do that, and you slow down QB2, even one or two drives, everybody's going to give up and fold. Running the ball, they haven't been able to do that against anybody. They couldn't do it against Tennessee. Again, understandable, great team. Couldn't do it against JMU. Their leading rusher was for 28 yards, Mike Collins. They totaled 18 yards as a team. Now, that takes into fact that sack yardage is counted as rushing yardage in college football, which is garbage. It's garbage statistic decision. We should really stop doing that, but that's the minus 30 there. So let's take all the quarterbacks' yardage out of that. As a team, they got 48 yards, if none of those were planned rushes by the quarterback. It's terrible. Hopefully we can continue to let them be terrible at that and take a step up, because I would imagine that our secondary is going to put up more of a fight than JMU's secondary against a freshman or non-freshman quarterback. Malik Washington is their leading receiver. He put up 119 yards on 5 receptions. He's a deep play threat there. Got to make, you know, keep pace with him. Kobe Pace had 1 for 75 yards. So that was just a broken play, kind of like we had against Charlotte. Those things are going to happen. Malik Washington's really the one to look out for. 5'8", 194, senior out of Georgia. On the season so far, 9 receptions, 148 yards, and a TD. Erase him. Put Still on him. Let's Still show you who he is. Put Shepard on him if you think he's your better corner. Erase him. And if you can do that, the rest of the team is good enough to put up the fight and keep everything fine. I don't think this is going to be a big deal. I think that we are going to score at least 38 points again. I think that we're going to hit the over. I think that we're going to cover. I think that we're definitely going to get some player props here. Like I told you earlier, easiest money out there is Hemby plus 500 or a receiving touchdown. Sounds great to me. Please give me that every week. I will make money if you let me bet that every week. But I think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be fun. I'm going to be down there, 2 o'clock, lot 4B, getting it in. And then hopefully after this game, myself and Fred will get back with you next week and do the Big Ten breakdown. We should have a good idea of who the Big Ten teams are at this point, a good idea of who we are at this point, and give you the full projections. We talked at the beginning of the year. I want at least 8 regular seasons and a bowl win. I'm not backing off that yet. It might be a higher number by the time we're said and done with this game. We'll see. I think it's a possibility. I think it shows progress. But we need to show progress in the stands, too. God bless us with the weather, because Lord knows our fans are not going to sit in anything other than perfect weather. It looks to be that it's going to be low 70s, no sunshine because it's dark. The LEDs are ready to go. People are going to complain about Friday traffic being a reason for a late crowd. Don't be that person. Just get there. Just get off work. Just leave early. Or Uber to the stadium and don't worry about parking. Get there. Be in the stadium. Do this. Fill it up. And if you're up top, come on down and fill the bowl. Nobody's stopping you. If you're up on the top stands, come on down and fill the bowl. Make this look good on national TV. Nobody's stopping you. There's nobody guarding any of the sections except for the Terrapin Club under Tyson Tower. Come on down and fill the bowl with us. Come sit with me in Section 7. Well, let's go. One last preseason game until we go to the real show. Got to go up to Michigan State with all their problems. Their interim head coach, I guess, suspended, whatever you want to call the absolute debacle that Michigan State continues to be. Football, gymnastics, anything you can think of. Absolute disaster. Hopefully we can get up there, get that win, come on back, and keep it rolling through the Big Ten. Well, I hope you really enjoy this week. All you ACC truthers, all the ones that miss these rivalries, get your butt down to the stadium. If you're going to talk about it, be about it. If the reason you say you left is because we should never have left the ACC and I miss the old rivalries, well, then be there. And if you don't come, don't ever say it again because you lost your argument. It's here. Come see it. You should also came to the Pinstripe Bowl. You should also came to the Duke's Mayo Bowl. So you almost already lost your argument. Now it's right down the street. Come back and see this rivalry y'all cried about. It's right down the road. And if not, stop talking. Hope to see you guys out there. You know where I'll be. Lot 4B, Section 7, having a blast. Till next time, guys. Here's to wishing all is well under the show.